Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to call this meeting to order. This is the February 16th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. My name is Andy Kotkamp, and I've been appointed by the Chelan County Board of Commissioners to serve as the Land Use Hearing Examiner. My job is to render decisions on various applications that are authorized to come before me. And those include all the items that we have on the agenda for today. There's a development deferral requested, there's conditional use permit, there's variances, there's administrative appeals, and the plan development with a major subdivision. I consider any testimony presented at today's hearing, as well as all the written materials that are already on file, in order to make my decision. The hearing process does have certain rules, but I still try to conduct these meetings in a relaxed and informal manner. We have a large number of people here today, so I'll probably be a little bit more strict about how I conduct the meeting. But in any event, here's how the hearing is going to proceed. We'll take each item separately. For each item, staff will present their report and make whatever recommendations that they wish to make. And then I will give the applicant or appellant an opportunity to present their testimony. The applicant and appellants have the burden of proof for the applicants to show compliance with all applicable rules and regulations, and for the appellants to demonstrate that the decision that is being appealed has been as an error in law or fact. So for the variances and the conditional use permit and the special permit for the road deviations on the short plat, those will have public participation allowed. There'll be public testimony. And then if there's testimony in opposition to those projects, then the applicants will be given an opportunity to present their testimony. That also includes the plan development and major subdivision as well. Now, we have several administrative appeals. I don't know if people are here on those. While you are welcome to be here, and this is an open hearing for that, there's no public testimony during those appeal hearings, and I want you to be aware of that. The reason is because basically this is a matter between the county and the appellant. The county has made a decision based upon various factors, and the appellant is now appealing that decision based upon those factors. So bringing in outside evidence that the county did not rely upon in making its decision just isn't appropriate for an administrative appeal. So that's why I say this beforehand, especially because of the large number of people here. If you came expecting to be able to testify on one of the administrative appeal matters, you will not be able to do so. So I want you to be aware of that. Now, I have the option following this hearing to keep the record open if I think there's a need for additional written testimony to be submitted on any matter. But in any event, my written decision will be made within 10 working days after I close the public record. I have except as provided by the Chelan County Code regarding requests to reopen the hearings or request for reconsideration, my decision on all of these matters will be final and conclusive unless they are appealed. All of these matters are subject to appeal by what's called a land use petition action. They have to be filed within 21 days of the date of the issuance of the decision. And if the appeal is not timely filed, the appeal would be barred. The bottom line is that if you're considering an appeal of any of my decisions, you really should seek immediate legal advice. Once again, I've reviewed all the items on today's agenda. I don't have any interest in any of the properties or the proposals to be heard today, and I'll be able to fairly and objectively consider each item on today's agenda. And outside of receiving and reviewing the staff report for each item, along with all those file materials referenced in the staff report, which included all the application materials, there's noticing documents, there's SEPA documents. And Ms. Shepherd, could you please mute yourself? I would appreciate that. Basically, other than receiving and reviewing the entire planning staff file of record, I've not had any communication regarding any of the items that are on today's agenda. So with those representations, if you do have an objection to me serving as a hearing examiner for any item on today's agenda, you need to unmute yourself at this time and state so. All right, hearing none, we'll turn to the first item on today's agenda. This is, a development agreement that's been requested for the benefit of Lance and Jodell Harvey regarding deferral of frontage improvements on Lakeshore Drive regarding their short plat referenced as SP 21-214. For the record, I will admit into the record the proposed development agreement, the staff presentation, and the entire planning staff file on this matter. And is there somebody from Public Works that wishes to address this today?
Yes, Andrew Bruner from Chelan County Public Works.
All right, Mr. Bruner, what do you want to tell me about this?
So this is a an option per their conditions of approval to defer any improvements, and they would have to pay their proportionate share should the county do a road project along that road, and the parcel owners would have to pay their proportionate share for any of that frontage along the parent parcel. And that's pretty much it.
So the development agreement that would then have to be approved by the county commissioners, is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Bruner. Are either Mr. or Mrs. Harvey here today? Real quick on the list of folks that are here, I do not see the Harveys. Mr. Bruner, were they given notice of the date, place, and time of this hearing?
I'm not certain of that. Alex may be able to answer that question.
Yes, they were.
All right. Okay, now, did any member of the public come to testify on this matter? If so, just unmute yourself. Okay, hearing none. Is there anything further from you, Mr. Bruner?
No, nothing from us.
All right, well, thank you very much. I don't have any questions. It's all fairly straightforward, so I appreciate that. I'm going to close the record on this matter, and I'll have my decision made within the next 10 working days. We will now move on to item number 2 on the agenda. This is a conditional use permit application, given application number CUP 20-014. This is an application submitted by Brent and Allison Johnson for the use of an existing accessory dwelling unit as a 2-bedroom bed and breakfast. This relates to property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I will admit into the record at this time by this reference that staff report, all the attachments to the staff report, which included all the application materials, all the noticing documents, all the comments that have come through, their SEPA documents. I will admit all those items. Indeed, I'll admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference. And turn this matter over to Mr. White for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Krakia. So CUP 2020-014 is an application for a conditional use permit to use an existing accessory dwelling unit as a 2-bedroom bed and breakfast. The parcel is zoned residential low density 10,000, so RL10 within the Leavenworth UGA. As part of the application materials, the applicants have supplied the floor plan of the ADU along with a management plan for guests to abide by. Two parking spaces are provided for adjacent to the ADU. New signage is proposed adjacent to the front door of the ADU displaying the occupancy guidelines and contact information. The applicants have obtained a Group B water system permit for the existing water supply in order to demonstrate adequate water availability, and the ADU is connected to an existing approved septic system. Staff has reviewed the application materials, the agency comments for consistency with applicable codes and regulations, and as conditions recommends approval of the CUP 2020-014.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. White. I have reviewed this actually several times. I do not have any questions at this time. Are either Mr. or Mrs. Johnson here today, the applicant or the applicant's representative?
Yes, we are here. We're both here.
Yes, hi.
Hi, so who's going to testify, one or the other or both?
Both.
All right. I'll have you each then raise your right hand for me. And do each of you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
All right. So you are both the applicants and the property owners of this property. Is that correct?
Yes. That is correct.
All right. What would you like to tell me?
Well, we've been working with Alex, early on. I think it's been a year and a half process. There was a moratorium on not just short-term rentals, but bed and breakfasts. The property that we purchased actually was operated as a bed and breakfast at one time several years ago, and several of the adjoining properties also have run as bed and breakfasts. We are actually going to operate we're not going to actually be applying for a permit to provide food. It's just part of being in the Leavenworth UGA that the city of Leavenworth, I believe we have to abide by their rules and procedures, but really just an opportunity to use this space on our property for providing lodging to guests. Currently, the property is occupied as a long-term rental, and that was just due to the fact that it wasn't available to be used as a bed and breakfast at that time. It's been a long process, but getting all of the paperwork together and everything, we're moving forward, though we may or may not choose to continue and have a bed and breakfast, just depending on how things. Right now, it's occupied again as a long-term rental, but we want to make sure that as we move forward, that we have all the permits and everything in place to do that.
So this property is your primary residence, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
And you understand that you have to be on site during any period of rental for a bed and breakfast. You understand that?
That is correct, yes.
All right. Have you had a chance to look at the proposed conditions of approval in the revised staff report?
Yes.
You have any objection with any of those proposed conditions of approval?
No objections.
All right. Either Mr. or Mrs. Johnson, anything else you'd like to add about this project?
Nothing at this time.
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. We're going to turn it over to the public then. Did any member of the public come to testify on this matter? If so, would you please unmute yourself and identify yourself? Okay, hearing none. Is there anything further from staff?
In regards to the food permit, if they are not planning on serving food on site, then they would not necessarily need to obtain a food permit. But if they do intend on serving breakfast items, or they would need to obtain a food permit from the health district. And then also just a reminder that if you do decide not to move forward or have this rented as a bed and breakfast, we would need demonstration of compliance with these conditions of approval before the end of the first year as part of the conditions of approval. So if that's something that is just something to keep in mind as a condition of approval, that if you decide that you are not going to move forward with a bed and breakfast, then this would expire within a year.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, do you understand that?
Yes, we do. We understand that. Is that a year from today's date?
Year from my decision.
From your decision, okay. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you very much. What I'm going to do, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, I am going to close the public record portion of the hearing at this time, and I will have, again, my written decision made within the next 10 working days. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
turn to item number 3 on the agenda. This is a variance application, given application number VAR 21431, and this is an application submitted to reduce the required front yard setbacks on subject property for the future construction of a detached garage. This property is located within Chelan County, that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. And for the record, I will admit into the record that staff report, all those attachments to the staff report, which included all the application materials, all the noticing documents, there are site plans, comments, SEPA documents. I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference, and turn this matter over again to Mr. White for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Kotkamp. So variance 2131 is an application to vary the required 25-foot building setback from the front lot line of the property down to 1 foot in order to for the future construction of a detached garage. The subject property is within the RR 2.5 zoning district and currently has a single family residence. The applicant is requesting the variance due to the topographical conditions existing on the site. Adjacent to the road is a very steep hillside. And so that's essentially the, which makes location. And then with the siting of the property along the Wenatchee River, it makes it hard to have a buildable area that is outside of all required setbacks on the property. So that is essentially the requirement or the request for the variance for this one. The proposed use is consistent to other, to similar uses on neighboring properties. There are a few neighboring properties that also enjoy a reduced front yard setback due to the topography of that area. Public Works did not have any objection to the variance request due to the topography of the site, but will require the applicant to record a hold harmless agreement. No agency comments were received that objected to the proposed variance. No public comments were received. Staff has reviewed the application materials, agency comments, for consistency with applicable codes and regulations, and as conditioned, recommends approval of varying the 25-foot front yard setback down to 1 foot.
All right, thank you very much. I reviewed everything on this matter as well. I do not have any questions for staff. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Yes.
Hello, sir. Can you state your name and an address for the record?
Ben Taylor, 403 North Franklin, Wenatchee.
All right, Mr. Taylor, I'll have you raise your right hand for me. And sir, do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Taylor, I take it you are here as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of the property owners today, is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, sir, what would you like to tell me?
I think Alex pretty much covered it. We can only really build in one spot into the garage. Everything else has easement, too steep or septic in it. And it's pretty much going to sit right next to a similar detached garage on the neighboring lot. So it's been done before, and we'll have the geotechnical work done beforehand to make sure it's structurally sound on that hillside. And that's about it.
Did you, on behalf of the applicant, have an opportunity to review the staff report and the proposed conditions of approval?
I have.
All right. Do you agree with the representation set forth within the staff report?
I do.
And do you have any objection to any of the proposed conditions of approval?
Nope.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I do not have any questions for you, but we'll turn this over to the public now. Okay, Mr. Taylor. All right. We'll once again turn this over to the public. Did any member of the public come to testify on this matter? If you did, just feel free to unmute yourself and we'll take your testimony. Well, Mr. Taylor, it doesn't look like anybody's here on this. Mr. White, is there anything further?
Nothing further from staff. Thank you.
All right, then, Mr. Taylor, what I'm going to do is I'm going to close the public record portion of this hearing. And I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Moving along, we are now on to the next item on today's agenda, which is also a variance application, given application of VAR 21536. This is an application to reduce a required agricultural setback from the northern property line of the subject property for the future construction of a residence. The request is to reduce the required 100-foot agricultural setback down to 10 feet. This is property located within Schlange County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I will admit into the record that staff report and all those attachments to the staff report, which included all the application materials, all the noticing documents. There have been public comments that have come through on this one, expert witness reports. I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time on this reference and turn this matter over to Mr. White for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Packham. So application variance 21-536 is an application to vary the required 100-foot agricultural setback from the northern line of the property down to 10 feet in order for the future construction of a single family residence. The subject property is within the commercial agricultural land zoning district and is currently vacant. For this application, the applicant has obtained the signatures on an agricultural setback waiver from all of the neighboring properties except for the neighbor to the north. The proposed use for this property is similar to the neighboring properties to the north and the south, and that's for residential development. The neighboring property to the north is not utilizing their property for agricultural production. No agency comments were received that objected to the proposed variance. The public comments that I did receive were from the neighbor to the north stating that they did not wish to have the applicant build a house on the subject property. Staff has reviewed the application materials, agency comments for consistency with the applicable codes and regulations, and as conditions recommends approval of reducing the agricultural setback of the northern property line from 100 feet down to 10 feet, which is the zoning setbacks.
Okay, I do have a question because I looked through all the materials. I couldn't find this. So I've looked at the site plan and it has a depiction of the lot in question with the various 10-foot and 30-foot setbacks listed on there. How wide is the lot? Do you have the width of the lot available?
It is about 100 feet across. So without the reduction of the agricultural setback, they would be limited to about a 10-foot swath to build upon to which to build the residence on.
Okay. So it's just a little bit over 100 feet wide. Is that your understanding?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Okay. All right, is the applicant ready to proceed?
I'm not sure if the applicant is on the Zoom call.
I have, from the staff report, we have the applicant as Humberto Ramirez, or Rancho Ramirez LLC. Is there anybody here on behalf of the applicant today?
There is. Hold on, we're unmuting them. So. Humberto, you have to unmute yourself in order to join in the conversation.
Is he by telephone or?
He's on an iPhone.
I think to unmute yourself, is it what is it, star six? Or maybe he's logged in differently. Mr. Ramirez, we need to have you unmute yourself if you'd like to testify today.
It's right there, iPhone.
Well, Mr. Ramirez is having some problems. We'll come back to him. Mr. Ramirez, one more time. Is there any way you can unmute yourself to provide testimony? All right, we'll come back to that at the end of the hearing. Mr. Ramirez, don't hang up. We'll try to sort this thing out by the end of the hearing. But I don't want to make people who came to testify to this matter wait. Is there any member of the public that wishes to testify on this matter? If there's any member of the public here, just unmute yourself. And not seeing anything happening. So what we're going to do is we're going to keep the record open, Mr. White, until the end of the hearing, and then remind me after we finish up with what we do with that plan development to come back and see if we can make contact with Mr. Ramirez, okay?
Okay, and also Mr. Kockamp, just there were a couple additional comments I forwarded on to you regarding this application that I received after my staff report had been submitted. I think you did notice that you had received them, but just for
the yes, I do have two public comments that came on February 7th. And there was a comment from Maria Zavala.
That would be the one.
Okay. And I can't, oh, darn it. Okay, I'm having a problem with my Outlook and now it's blocking my screen. Okay, there we go. So we'll keep the record open until the end of the hearing, but we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda now. This is a one of those administrative appeals. This is given application number AA21564. And this is an appeal of an administrative decision on the denial of a short-term rental permit as an existing non-conforming short-term rental. This relates to property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. And I will admit into the record at this time by this record, the original application materials for the short-term rental, all of the documents and the denial and the documents upon which the denial was based, and then the appeal documents that have been submitted. I will admit all those items into the record at this time by this reference and turn this matter over to Ms. Riles for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Kockamp. As I forwarded you the email from this appellant, he has requested a continuance, and we're recommending that it be scheduled for March 16th at 1 p.m.
I forgot about that. Is the applicant or the applicant's agent here, or the appellant's agent here today?
They were out of town, which is why they requested.
All right. So hearing no objection, I will continue this matter until March 16, 2022 at what time did you say?
1 p.m., please.
All right. It is so continued. It's been continued on the record at this hearing. This hearing has been duly noticed, so no additional notice will be required. And we will reconvene this hearing on March 16th. All right, next item on the agenda is AA22-004. And this is also a request for an administrative appeal regarding the denial of a short-term rental permit for an existing non-conforming short-term rental. once again, relating to property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report and the application materials. And once again, I will admit into the record the original application materials, the denial, and the materials upon which the denial was based, and the appeal materials. All those matters will be admitted into the record at this time by this reference. And again, turn this matter over to Ms. Riles for the staff presentation.
Thank you. The property questions located at 202 Parkway Drive in Manson. The owner of this property has not held a vacation rental permit, which has been required in the Manson UGA per Chelan County Code 1123040. Since they have not held a vacation rental permit since the 2018 permit year. Applicant had contacted the department prior to submitting an application and was told that her property would not qualify for an existing non-conforming status on October 8th, 2021. Applicant then contacted the STR manager November 12th, detailing her circumstance. And the STR manager responded to her November 15th with an email confirming the disqualification, citing the short-term rental code. November 17th, the applicant submitted materials via email to apply for existing non-conforming short-term rental. Per code 1188-290, which is the short-term rental code, section 2EIF states that if in Manson, the short-term rental was to have been properly registered as a vacation rental with Chelan County, per Chelan County code 1123040, as of August 25th, 2020, or that they held a vacation rental permit in Manson as of July 28th, 2019, this applicant did not hold a VR permit in the relevant timeframe. January 3rd, 2022, permit clerk who was being trained in the process to process applications erroneously contacted the applicant and told her her application was approved. A formal denial letter was sent to the applicant January 4th, 2022, citing Chelan County Code, the short-term rental code, section 2EIF, which states if located inside Manson Urban Growth Area, documentary evidence that the short-term rental was properly registered as a vacation rental as of August 25th, 2020, or that they held a vacation rental permit in the Manson UGA as of July 28th, 2019, that this would also satisfy their documented evidence of revenue and taxes paid. Again, the applicant did not hold the required VR permit in a relevant time frame. On January 10th, an appeal request was received from the applicant. Staff recommends that the denial be upheld based on the applicant not qualifying for the status based on Chelan County Code 1188-290, the short-term rental code, and the non-compliance with obtaining the required vacation rental permit in Manson to operate legally in the relevant time frame.
All right, thank you very much, Ms. Riles. Is the appellant here today? So I'll need to have you unmute yourself, please.
Hi.
I'll have you state your name and address, and then I'm going to swear you in as a witness.
It's Sandra Sexton and 202 Parkway Drive in Manson.
All right, ma'am, would you raise your right hand for me? And do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you. And what would you like to tell me?
So I don't completely understand why our permit was denied. We've been operating at the townhome as a short-term rental for years, and we've always had a property manager. We've always hired somebody to manage the property, and they've paid our taxes, and they've paid for the permits for years. And I have documentation that they paid taxes of like $902 in 2019, $970 in 2020. And so we've paid taxes and we paid permits, you know, for years. All the other requirements that were there, like the UBI number, the hard line, everything else we've done. I was contacted. And our townhome also is located between a hotel and Wapato Point, which are both short-term rental. So I'm not, I don't really understand why it wouldn't be an ideal location for a short-term rental. And because we hired these property management company to pay for our taxes, which they did, and then our permits, but apparently I don't understand that the county didn't get the permits for, I guess, 2019, but we'd always paid it before because we've always just hired a company. And then on January 3rd, while I was in the hospital, I got a call from the community development, the county, and they said that I needed to fill out a form and send in $625 for my permit. And then not only did I get a call, but I also got an email that saying the same thing, that I needed to do that. And so I sent in the money. And then, you know, I told my family, everybody, we got approved. And then a day or so later, I didn't even get a call. I just got an email that said, you're denied and you need to send in, I think, $580 within 10 days to be able to appeal this. And it's just been very frustrating and confusing. And we really weren't trying to like sneak by and not pay our permits. If we would have known that maybe the property manager didn't pay the permit, we would have paid it. We just didn't know. And we've had this home since 2011, and then we've been in good faith just doing a short-term rental. And I tried to explain this to the Chelan County Development, and they don't care. And so I'm, just hoping that maybe it can get approved.
So do you have a copy of a permit for the relevant time frame that your property manager got, or do you agree that they just dropped the ball and didn't get a permit?
It's Vacasa. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're kind of a huge company. And we've been told that they just, they had always paid our permits before. And then for some reason, 2019, 2020, they just didn't. They didn't notify us. They didn't notify the county. The state and the county got our taxes that we paid, you know, the sales and lodging and the state taxes for those years and all the years before. Vacasa just said they had new people. And so the people in their company just didn't do that part that they were supposed to. And, you know, we've hired them. That's one of the biggest things for them to do for us was to pay those fees. And we're paying them a significant amount of our earnings to do that. And they just didn't do it. And we didn't find out about it until all this permitting, these new regulations came in. And then I called the Vacasa to get the, documentations about the permits, or maybe I called the county and they're like, you don't have permits. And so I thought it was just a mistake from Vacasa, but they just didn't do it. And we have no idea why. And so then we're kind of just trapped in the middle of, you know, we were trying to do the right thing and then assumed it was permitted. We weren't trying to like sneak by and not pay the permits. They, you know, we just paid an agent to do it and they didn't do it.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it.
Was there anybody else from the appellants that wanted to testify today? Was there anybody else here that wanted to testify? I know there was a few other names on the forms. No? All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Sexton. Is there anything further from staff?
No, thank you.
All right, ma'am, I'll look at this very carefully. I will take the facts and I'll look at the law and I will apply the facts to the law. I just have to remind everybody that I'm not given the discretion to make up new laws or to ignore existing laws. So I have to work within the boundaries of the rules and regulations that have been set by the county commissioners. So, I'll have a written decision made for you, though, within the next 10 working days, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda, we're going to take both of these separately, even though they are very similar. And as we've done before, we can when the appellants are testifying, we can incorporate testimony from one into the other, just to let you know that. But we'll start with the first one. This is administrative appeal given application number 22-012. This is an appeal submitted for the denial of a short-term rental permit for an existing non-conforming short-term rental. This relates to property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I will admit into the record at this time by this reference, there is the staff report that has been submitted. There are all of the appeal or application documents. There's noticing documents. There's the denial and the documents upon which the denial relied upon. There is the appeal that has been filed. There's been an appeal brief that I received yesterday with a declaration of an Ariana Martinez, a declaration of a Don McKenzie, and a declaration of a Sean Lynn. All of those are admitted into the record at this time by this reference. And again, we'll turn this matter over to Ms. Riles for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Kotkamp. So this property, is located at 9752 East Leavenworth Road. It is in the Leavenworth UGA. Applicants submitted materials via their property manager for an existing non-conforming short-term rental, and those materials were received December 20th, 2021. CEA LLC became the owner of record in 1999, and zoning regulations were already in place at that time for RL zoning district within the UGA, stating a transient accommodation has not been a permitted use in the residential zoning district since the in the city since 1989 for Ordinance 852. Short-term rental code 1188-290 subsection 2C4B states that all existing non-conformance claims within a UGA will be subject to joint review by the county and the affected city. The applicant submission materials were scanned and sent to Lilith Espier in Leavenworth for joint review on December 20th, 2021. The same day, response from Lilith Vespier and Leavenworth was received, and the city showed no record of the short-term rental in UGA and supported the county's findings for denial. December 29th, a letter was sent to the applicant notifying them of the denial of the existing non-conforming status, noting that short-term rentals were not allowed in that RL fall zone. And then on January 12th, 2022, an appeal request was received from the appellant's attorney, Gaten, Screen, and Weidebach. We do recommend that the denial be upheld based on the applicant not qualifying for the status based on Chelan County Code 1188-290 and joint review with Leavenworth and finding short-term rental business activities not allowed in the RL-12 zone in which the property is located per Leavenworth Municipal Code 1825030. I did receive the significant submission from the appellant's attorney yesterday, and I've had opportunity to review it. I do want to note that on page two, of Mr. Hitchcock's statement, in the second paragraph, they're stating that the city's clear intent. I'm not sure how he can speak to what the city's clear intent was. And then I had stated that CEA became the owner in 1999, not that they had started their STR business at that time. It's actually changed ownership between the owner and the LLC a couple of times. And then down below, also on page two, paragraph five, they're stating that the Riverside Vacations home should be recognized as a legal non-conforming existing use because first, it satisfies the definition of lawfully established. It's not lawfully established because it's not allowed in that zone. And two, they refer to Chelan County Code 1188-290, section 2E2A, and stating that it falls under the and that it falls under the safe harbor provision as well. So both of these things circle back to section 2E, which goes that it has to be illegally established. Further, it takes you back to that definition on 2E. And if we go to page 3, the arguments in paragraph 2 and 3 both circle back to 2E as well. And at the very last, when they're listing out reasons why in their A through G, why it meets the definition of a non-conforming, existing non-conforming short-term rental. In letter D, they state that it submitted its STR application before 12/31/21 as that condition. And that's not what it is. It's that condition is that the STR operator has obtained required land use permits within the requirements of section 4, subject to proving again back to 2E. So all of these arguments that they're making circle us back to the same definition of what they have to meet to be an existing non-conforming. And it all circles back to the fact that if it's not allowed in that RL12 zone, then they're not lawfully established.
All right, is there anything further from staff?
No, sir.
All right, is the appellant ready to proceed?
We are, Your Honor.
Close your brief here. And Mr. Gatens, how are you?
Mr. Kottkamp, good to Zoom you again. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Good.
I'll have you state your name and address for the record before we get started.
Yes, Clay Gatens on behalf of, looks like we're going to start with Riverside Vacation Home AA22-102. My address of record is 305 Applets Way, Cashmere, Washington, 98815. I understand that, as you said, that we also have sort of an identical appeal as well under 22-013, and we can address that at the end, but I'll address the arguments as to 22-012 for this part of the hearing.
All right, we have evidence that you had submitted yesterday. Do you want to be sworn in as a witness yourself, or will you be calling any witnesses today?
I do not need to be sworn in as a witness, and I won't be calling any live witnesses.
All right, thank you very much. Then what would you like to tell me, Mr. Gatens?
Well, Mr. Examiner, here we are again. And I'm emboldened by your statement prior about the confines of your duties to apply the law to the facts without discretion. So entering in on that theme and understanding that you have recently ruled on a very similar administrative appeal that involved a Mr. Latta, L-A-T-T-A, which I've reviewed, as well as, of course, the staff reports and the denials themselves in this matter, I want to focus you on two issues. There's actually not disagreement between the county's position and the appellant's position that the denials are based on two fundamental premises. The disagreement is that the county is wrongful in their interpretation of those two fundamental premises. The first fundamental premise, right, is that the assertion that under Leavenworth City Code, that prior to 2017, and the reason why that 2017 date is important is because that is when the city of Leavenworth enacted ordinance number 1542 that specifically addressed and prohibited short-term rentals in the relevant RL12 zone. The county's position has been that prior to the enactment of this ordinance in 2017, short-term rentals were not allowed in RL12 zones. This is incorrect for a number of factual and I think undisputed reasons. The county is relying on its position based on an email received from Lilith Vaspier, who is a planner for the city of Leavenworth. Ms. Vaspier informed the county that her opinion was that prior to the ordinance in 2017, short-term rentals were not allowed in the RL12 zone based upon a 2016 city attorney opinion letter that the city of Leavenworth had solicited, asking that city attorney to tell them whether under the existing code at that time, which dated back, as I understand it, to 1989, a time much prior to STRs even being a thing to contemplate, that the city attorney had opined at their request as to whether that existing code and its reference to transient housing did or did not apply to short-term rentals. That attorney opinion letter concluded that it did, and ergo that the code at the time did not allow for transient housing in the RL 12 zones. The problem with that analysis and the reliance on that attorney opinion letter is threefold. First, as I'm sure you're well aware, an attorney opinion letter is simply that. It is an opinion offered by an attorney. It is not law. It is not statute. It is not ordinance. It is not a legislative act. It's not even permissible rulemaking. It is merely an opinion solicited by and given by an attorney. Number two, it's clear, please mute whoever's unmuted right now. It's clear that the city of Leavenworth in 2016 itself did not take that opinion letter as law or a correct interpretation because there was no enforcement or prohibition of short-term rentals at that time in the RL 12 zones. Number three, and probably the most telling, is that the city of Leavenworth itself felt compelled in 2017 to actually enact an ordinance to prohibit short-term rentals in the RL 12 zones. All of these facts are dispositive that the attorney opinion letter that the city planner is relying upon, and therefore the county has relied upon, for the premise that they were not allowed prior to 2016 or any time prior, is just incorrect. They were not allowed as of the enactment of the 2017 ordinance. And that really concludes the analysis here. If it is a fact that it wasn't until 2017 that the city of Leavenworth disallowed short-term rentals in these zones, then the entire analysis and the entire premise by the county fails. So that's the first issue. And the second issue is that even if, Mr. Examiner, even if you or the next court that will hear this issue determines that despite it being based on an opinion letter, despite non-enforcement, and despite the evidence, this dispositive evidence of 2017 ordinance, somehow nonetheless, these particular RL 12 short-term rentals were not permitted. It doesn't matter under the short-term rental code that has been enacted as of September 21st, 2021 by the county. And here's why. The county has offered to you, and I think you've unfortunately bought into some of it, that their interpretation of the short-term rental code stands for the basic proposition that so-called illegal short-term rentals are simply disallowed as of the enactment of the short-term rental ordinance. And here's why that's wrong. The short-term rental code is, I think, admittedly a confusing and poorly drafted code section. And so to a certain extent, it's understandable that there could be differing interpretations. But what's not understandable, Mr. Examiner, is to simply cite to one portion of the code and not do the full analysis of what is a very detailed and lengthy code section that interrelates with itself in numerous ways. So here's what the county's done, and then I'm going to tell you why it's wrong. And I'm going to point to the specific black and white language of the code. I'm going to provide you citations. And believe it or not, I'm going to actually agree with the staff that just said it all ties back to 2E. Because it actually does. So the first thing I'm going to tell you is that the county has taken the position that they somehow know what the intent of the short-term rental task force was when it was wrestling with the issues of how do we create these statutes? How do we create these ordinances? And most specifically in this case, what do we do about these properties that are located in the UGA zones? And I think that it's interesting that the county would tell you that they know what the intent of that was when these staff members were not on that task force. They did not participate in that task force. Many of them were not with the employee of the county during that task force, and certainly not the deputy civil prosecutor in the Latta case can tell you what the intent of that task force was. I can tell you who can tell you the intent of that task force is the two sworn declarations from the members of the task force that dedicated hundreds of hours of time and have offered testimony under penalty of perjury what the process and the intent of these relevant sections were. Those have been submitted to the record, and there's nothing in the record, Mr. Examiner, that would support a countervailing statement of what the intent of these sections were. So bearing that in mind, as we walk through these code sections, you do have evidence in front of you that can actually speak to what the intent was as to these UGA properties. And that analysis starts with, bear with me because these sections are, they're long, starts with 2C subsection V as in Victor. And that section says existing non-conforming short-term rentals of any tier level are not subject to the limitations in this subsection 2C, provided they comply with all the provisions of subsection 2E. Okay, so 2E is going to be where we land eventually, and that's actually consistent with the county's position. But you have to look up a couple of sections to 2C, 4, lowercase a, 1, that says if a short-term rental use is operating in violation of the existing county-adopted city codes for that UGA, the rental must immediately cease all operations of that use on the date of the adoption of this chapter. A property operating in violation of existing city UGA land use regulations has no legal existing conforming status as a short-term rental. Okay, that's the county's analysis. That's where it begins and that's where it stops. But the problem is that after that comes the section I just read under sub V as in Victor. And it says existing non-conforming, not legal, just the word non-conforming, short-term rentals of any tier level are not subject to the limitations of subsection 2C, i.e. the preceding subsection. It just says it in black and white. They're not there. They're not subject to it. Well, why would that be? If you look to the declarations that have been submitted, the task force said that's the safe harbor provision that we intentionally created and fought for as part of the process, because we knew that there was UGA properties and it was never our mission or goal to allow them to be left out in the cold, okay? Then your question should be, okay, Mr. Gatens, what's the point of the preceding 2C4A1 provision? Number one, I can't tell you what the intent was because I wasn't part of that task force, but it seems pretty clear to me that it applies to non-conforming or illegal short-term rentals that are being conducted in zones that would otherwise allow them to exist. And so an example of that is just what you just heard on this unfortunate scenario in the preceding appeal that related to the Manson property. The Manson area allows for short-term rentals in that area, but unfortunately they weren't complying with, and I think it's due to no fault of the applicant, but I'm just using this as an example, that they weren't following the licensure requirements, right? That's what that provision would apply for. The safe harbor provision at 5 says, look, existing, not legal non-conforming, existing non-conforming short rentals aren't subject to that section. So then you have to go to, and this is where the county and I agree, you have to go to 2E, which addresses specifically existing short-term rentals. It doesn't say non-conforming, it doesn't say illegal, it says existing non-conforming or existing short-term rentals. 2E, two pages later, finally gets to 2EII, And this is where it comes together. And this is where I would ask you to focus your attention and your analysis. 2EI specifically addresses non-conforming short-term rental units in restricted zones, basically zones that aren't going to allow for a short-term net rental no matter what, but they do exist at the time of this ordinance. Under sub A, it says, except for provided in subsections 2E, 3, and 4 down below, which are not applicable, it says, an existing short-term rental operating as of December 27, 2021 is considered non-conforming when one of the or more of the following conditions is met. And subsection 2 is they're located in a zone that doesn't allow for them to exist after the enactment of this zoning. So subsection A is talking about existing short-term rentals that are in operation. It's defining them as non-conforming for purposes of this code. It is not defining them as non-conforming only if they're legal or illegal. They are not defining them the way that the county argues, which is general land use principles of, hey, in order for you to be considered a non-conforming use, you have to have been a non-prohibited use prior to the creation of whatever code made you non-conforming. This 2EIIA section is creating a specific definition that says any existing short-term rental that's actually operating as of this September date is considered non-conforming when, amongst other things, they're located in a zone that just won't allow for short-term rentals under these subsections. So that's the difference. That's how you reconcile the intent to create a safe harbor provision for these properties that are located in the UGA zone that aren't going to be able to function in those zones otherwise. And so that's the totality of the reading of the code section, and whether your Mr. Examiner likes it, whether the county likes it, what I offer to you is that's the plain language of this ordinance or this code. And that's consistent with what the sworn declaration and testimony of the people that would actually be able to talk to the spirit and the intent of those sections conforms. So that's the analysis, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have on it.
Well, you've read and understood very well my decisions that were somewhat related to this. And I am having a hard time that the Chelan County Commissioners intended to say, on one hand, short-term rental operators, you are permitted in this area so long as you have a permit. But if you don't get a permit by this time, you fall outside of getting a permit automatically under the short-term rental code. But for those of you who have been operating without a permit and also with inside of a zone where this is not even allowed, then we're going to give you a permit because, it's not a traditional non-conforming, you know, like where it's zoned and I'm going to make up a zone RL1 where short-term rentals are allowed and they're operating legally as an R1 zone and then the zoning changes to RL17 and then that is Mr. Ramirez, now I need to have you to mute. There you go, mute yourself. Thank you. So the traditional legal non-conforming status, I guess is what I'm talking, Mr. Gayton. I understand the declarations from those that were on the task force. I'm just having a hard time getting my hands around people like the last applicant that did everything except get a permit, and they're not, according to the county, allowed to get a new permit, even though their uses were allowed under the underlying zoning. But somebody whose use was not allowed under the underlying zoning, and of course never got permits, so they were without permits, whether you want to call it illegally or unpermittedly operating, that they fall within a interpretation of the code that says, no, you guys are special people. We're going to give you people who have been operating vacation rentals where you're not even supposed to have vacation rentals. We're going to let you have a permit. So that's my basic, and I tried to say that earlier, but that's what I'm trying to overcome, Mr. Gates. I think you understand that, but that's my issue.
I do. And if I'd like to help unpack that a little bit.
Sure.
Great. Okay. So to give some context and color to what I think your basic struggle is, well, why would the commissioners, but again, informed by the task force that was comprised of multiple stakeholders that engaged in compromise. I mean, really, when you think about it, we had one side of that just didn't want short-term rentals to exist no matter what. And then we had short-term owners that wanted them to be able to exist. And there was a negotiation that kind of came up with this tasty sausage that you and I have in front of us. but let me tell you that part of that compromise and why the short-term task force and why the commissioners, my opinion, I'm not offering this as evidence, but I'm trying to respond to your questions with what I know, is that there was something called the Grand Compromise that was central to the task force. And it was really the notion that if the county enacted provisions that we need someone to mute, that if the county enacted provisions that just outright eliminated short-term rentals and provided for no sunsetting or no amortization of them, that they were going to face significant and massive regulatory takings, claims, causes, okay? And so that same concern about a regulatory taking and litigation based on that is why they had to recognize and agree to a safe harbor carve out for these folks in the UGA, because otherwise, and if the county's position is upheld, they will absolutely have a regulatory takings claim, and they will have the exact type of litigation that unfortunately we're having to deal with right now by the county's current interpretation, which was not the intent. So that's color to the background of why they would do that or why they did do that. Your other question is, I'm having a hard time, Clay, with folks that, you know, meant to do right. They were in a zone that allowed it, but they didn't get a permit, or they didn't fall, you know, inadvertently or intentionally, a regulation requirement. Why should those folks be have the rug pulled out from underneath them when folks that operated in zones that didn't allow it get the benefit of the doubt? The answer to that is, I think that the section that the county relies on was really intended to address folks that were in an area that would allow for short-term rentals and for whatever reasons weren't being fully compliant, and so they're gone. And I think the heartbreaking example is one that you just heard prior to this, but I think there's probably a lot of examples where folks just weren't playing by the rules, even though there were rules to follow. And I think that is the intent of that section. And I think that makes sense. That's different than folks that are in these UGA areas where maybe the city of Leavenworth had a restriction against them or not. There's reasonable minds could debate that, and that's one of the debates that we're having. Or they're in other UGA sections, and there are a few where that really the county itself didn't have regulations against short-term rentals until 2021. That's a fact. And then whatever the UGA area was also didn't have a prohibition against it. And I think that's what the UGA safe harbor carve out was intended to do, was to say, look, and it very clearly does say that. It says, look, notwithstanding, you know, subsection C4A1, we're saying existing non-continuing short rentals are not subject to the limitations of the preceding section, provided that they get in line and follow all the rules moving forward. And then in section E, you see a specific definition of non-conforming that just talks about existing short-term rentals, that they are considered non-conforming if they land in one of these zones where it's not allowed. So I think that the logic there was to say, we recognize there's going to be some UGA folks and we're going to create a carve out for them. Is it fair? Is it right? That's not my argument. My argument is I think they were doing that in face of the regulatory takings claims, and I think they were doing it as part of the grand compromise. And I think the distinction is that if you were in a zone that did allow for you to get licensure and operate and you chose not to, you're out. But if you were in a zone where it's not clear and you couldn't get a permit from the county, not right, and you, because before that there wasn't one before 2021, and you couldn't get it from the city because they didn't have regulations for or against it, then we're going to allow you to be safe harbored in as long as you comply with all the stuff moving forward. And so that's how I would reconcile the question and the issue that you have. And what I'd end with on that is, I'm not just making this up. I'm looking at these sections in the code. I'm looking at them saying, hey, these guys aren't subject to what we just said in 2C. And by the way, we're defining non-conforming as just existing as long as you do X, Y, and Z. What I'd finish on is just, if that wasn't what the county and the commissioners were trying to do as a function of the compromise of the task force, why would any of that language be in there in the first place?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Gatens. You make compelling and thoughtful arguments, and I'm going to reevaluate.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and in the spirit of that, I think we'll probably make a motion for reconsideration on the LADA case, so that so that you're not in a position necessarily if you're inclined to have a reevaluation where you're issuing inconsistent results. So that would be the spirit of that.
Okay, I understand that. Thank you very much. All right, is there anything further from the county?
No, thank you.
All right, what I will do, Mr. Gatens, is I am going to close the record on this hearing at this point. I'll have a written decision made within the next 10 working
days. Are you going to have any public comment?
No, I said that at the beginning, ma'am, that this is a matter between the county and the appellant, and it's the appellant appealing what the county's decision was and what the county decision was based upon. So there is no public testimony for these administrative appeals.
Okay.
And I said that at the beginning of the hearing so that if somebody didn't want to wait around, that they certainly didn't have to do that.
Can I make a written comment? Is there still time for that?
The only things I'm considering, ma'am, are the decision of the county and the basis, what the county based its decision on, and then the appellant's materials. So we can't reopen and say, well, they should have denied it for this reason and this reason and this reason, or because the county didn't rely upon any of that. So none of that evidence can come in, and it's up to the appellant to call their witnesses if they wanted some testimony to come in. So anyway, that's
I didn't have any record of receiving anything before this public hearing about this decision.
All right. Okay, so we're going to move along. We're going to turn to the next item, which is AA22-013. And this is a similar 22013. This is a similar situation. I'm going to admit those original application materials into the record. Once again, this property is related. It relates to property located within Chelan County. It is more specifically described in the original application and the denial documents. I'm going to admit into the record the original application for a short-term rental permit, the denial of that permit, and all the documents upon which that denial was based. We will then admit into the record. Let me get to my fancy file here. This is the Riverside Cabin LLC matter. And there are, again, the appeal brief that came in yesterday with the same declaration of Ariana Martinez, declaration of Don McKenzie, and declaration of Sean Lynn. All of those are admitted into the file at this time by this reference. I will admit also into the file at this time by this reference, the entire argument that was made by Mr. Gatens in the AA 22-012 matter that we just heard, that will all be incorporated into this record by this reference. And if Ms. Riles, if you want, I can incorporate your rationale from AA 22-012 also into the record at this time. I'll leave that up to you. Depending on, is that fine?
Yes, please.
All right, is there anything additional from the county?
The only other thing I had on this one, when I was researching the information we got from the appellant's attorney yesterday, is I did find there was a letter from the previous owner, Mr. Wolf, that Ms. Martinez refers to in her statement, who was the previous owner of the property. And he had written a letter as part of a code enforcement case back in 2003. And he was saying, this is what we're doing with the property. Please advise us of the county's policies and rulings. And he did receive a letter back that I would be happy to send to all involved parties, basically saying no. The final paragraph of the letter is, the activity you're proposing does not meet the definition of a bed and breakfast, guest inn, or supplementary section of the code referenced. The proposed use, however, is elsewhere defined. And this particular use would require a conditional use permit. If your property is in a zone that allows it, there is no conditional use permit on file for that parcel.
So, Mr. Gatens, I am inclined to allow this to be admitted into the record as rebuttal to what has been said was contained in the Martinez Declaration. Do you have any objection to that letter that neither you nor I have probably seen coming into the record? And I'll certainly keep the record open if you want some time to respond to that factually.
Yeah, no objection. I would have to ask that the record stay open so that I can take a look at it and respond. I would have a brief oral comment on it, but no objection to the admission.
Okay. So Ms. Riles, that will be admitted into the record. And I'm just going to specifically call that one Exhibit 1. And so that will need to be marked and then emailed to myself and to Mr. Gatens. So we'll move on. Anything else from the county then?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. The appellant, Mr. Gatens, are you ready to proceed?
I agree to the admission of my prior testimony. I'll limit my response in this one to the admission of the new letter. And what I'd say about that, I will take a look at it and ask that the record be kept open. But what I'd iterate to Mr. Examiner is that, you know, for purposes of this appeal and specifically of AA 22013, the relevant salient date is not 1996 or 2002 or 2012. The position is that the relevant date is 2017 when the actual ordinance was enacted. And so that any ancillary letters, interpretations, any of these extraneous things that were never enforced and were matters maybe of opinion of staff or city attorneys do not have the force of law, are not rulemaking, are not ordinances. And what is an ordinance, what is rulemaking, and what is law is the 2017 ordinance. And I'll rest on that point.
All right, thank you. How much time would you like to respond to this? Do you want through Friday or do you need longer?
If I could add through Monday, just in case there's something substantive, I really do need to.
No, I have no problem with that. We'll keep the record open. And Monday is the.
Monday's a holiday, sir.
Monday is a holiday. So let's go Tuesday, the 22nd at 5 p.m.
Yeah, even better. Thank you.
2/22/22, 5 p.m. Should make it do it 2/22 p.m. That would be appropriate.
I like it.
All right, thanks. All right. With that, I'm going to keep the record open until that date and time for the appellant to submit whatever additional information that they wish to submit regarding that. At that 5 p.m., the record will be closed, and I'll have my written decision made within 10 working days from that date. Mr. Gatens, would you have any objection if my decision in AA22-012 was not made until 10 working days after the record closes on AA22013, so those two decisions can come out at the same time?
I have no objection.
All right, thank you very much. All right, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Gatens. Always truly good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to turn to the last item on today's agenda. This is a plan development given application number PD 20-001 along with a major subdivision plat number 20-001. At this point, I'm not going to open the record. I need to apparently talk to some attorneys and the applicant about a SEPA appeal that was just filed apparently yesterday. And I see Mr. Beardsley here. Mr. Beardsley, does the applicant have an attorney that wants to talk today on this matter, or will you be presenting the applicant's position?
No, sir. Dan Beardsley, 325 32nd Street Northwest. I'm representing the applicant. I didn't feel like we needed legal counsel for this matter with regard to the SEPA appeal and any continuation. We are fine with hearing the appeal and the application today. We have no problem with that. But we do not have legal representation, and I don't pretend to offer any legal opinions.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm not going to hold the hearing today. I've got to study that SEPA appeal and give everybody an opportunity to respond, even if the applicant at this point indicates they may not wish to. Mr. Foster, what's the position of the county on this matter?
Well, thank you, Mr. Hearing Examiner. I think that consolidation is required under the law of the SEPA appeal and the underlying decision. The county was prepared to go ahead today with the underlying decision, but we would like to continue this for time to study this. Perhaps we need to do briefing. I understand that the appellant in this case, represented by Ms. Hurst, who I think is on the call, intends to call witnesses and so forth. So it might be a little bit more complicated than we anticipated. I'd recommend that we continue this to the April 20th hearing date.
All right. Is the SEPA appellant representative here today?
Good afternoon, Mr. Examiner. This is Megan Hurst. I represent the Rossies. Also here today is Dave Bricklin. He is co-counsel, and he will be running the hearing today. Well, actually, we're not doing the hearing today, but Dave, are you there?
Yes, I am. I was just looking at my calendar, I was just checking to see April 20 will work for me.
April 20 does not work for me. I don't.
We can take that off the calendar right now, because I'm not just going to schedule a hearing. I'm going to schedule a pre-hearing conference. Okay. I want to get everybody lined up as to what's going to happen at the hearing and see whether or not we need to have a special set or not, especially if there are witnesses. We'll talk about time limits of presentation, you know, the usual stuff Mr. Bricklin, I know, is very, very familiar with. This is subject to change in the event that the applicant wishes to hire an attorney to represent them in this matter. What I'd like to do is set a Zoom pre-hearing conference, and that will just involve the attorneys and Mr. Beardsley's schedule, and of course my schedule. I am looking at And I'll just throw out some times as they're available on my calendar. The afternoon of March 8th or any time on March 15th. So we'll start with Mr. Bricklin and Ms. Hurst. Are either one of those two blocks of time more agreeable?
Either of those work for me. And Ms. Hurst, how are you with those?
Either of those work for me as well.
All right, thank you. We'll go back to the other attorney on the line. Mr. Foster, any of those blocks preferred for yourself?
I'm sorry, we were muted. I think either work.
All right. So Mr. Beardsley, I guess I don't want to set a hearing that's too soon if the appellant or the applicant is going to hire legal counsel for the SEPA appeal. Do you have a preference as to those blocks of time on the 8th or the 15th?
Well, given the nature of what you're proposing, the applicant does have legal counsel. We just didn't think it was necessary for this hearing.
Right.
Thought it would continue. It's a little bit frustrating. Of course, we get less than 24 hours notice of an appeal. We've been in this process for 2 years. We want to get to a hearing and get this thing settled. So I will have to contact my client, who will then contact his legal counsel. That's obviously beyond my pay grade to do the sort of thing you're talking about. So how would you like to proceed with that in mind?
So I'll recognize a couple of things. It appears that the SEPA appeal was timely. I do understand that the applicant has been working on this project for a couple of years, but the SEPA determination was made late in the process, and that's when the appeal occurred. I don't want to unduly rush things. There were many issues raised in the SEPA appeal that are going to require time for everybody to manage, but I think we can have the pre-hearing conference. I would like to set it at 2 o'clock on April 8th. March 8th. Sorry about that. By Zoom, that'll be set up by the county. And then I will, I'm not going to issue a pre-hearing statement. I think that the attorneys that have been through this understand, and Mr. Beardsley as well, what kind of things we're going to need to talk about at this hearing, at this pre-hearing conference, not just a new hearing date, but also times of presentation, time limits of presentation, possible disclosure of witness lists and exhibits, and going through the SEPA determination that's been made by the county. So, but we'll start with 2 p.m. on March 8, 2022 by Zoom. And Mr. Beardsley, if your client's attorney is not available, then he needs to let me know the sooner rather than later, except I'm on vacation and I will be out of the office from this Friday until February 28th. So I won't be back in the office until the 28th to deal with any problems with that pre-hearing conference date. That doesn't mean that my office can't be involved if the parties want to get together and agree upon a new date. And then the county can contact my assistant, which it does for setting hearings. Her name is Tracy Park. And you can contact Tracy and see if I'm available on that particular day and time. Probably need to set aside at least an hour just so that we can get through things. If there are going to be any, one of the things you'll need to think about beforehand, or your attorneys will need to think about, is whether you anticipate the filing of any pre-hearing motions. And then we have to then set times for those and the briefing for those and the filing of those. And so anyway, without making this unduly complicated, I don't want to also make everybody's timelines so quickly that you can't reasonably meet, you know, deadlines. So right now we'll set it for March 8 at 2 p.m. And like I said, if that doesn't work, Mr. Beardsley, for your client's counsel, then hopefully counsel can all talk to each other and come up with a date. And then, so anyway, we'll start. Any questions from the SEPA appellants, Mr. Bricklin or Ms. Hurst?
Nothing, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Beardsley, any questions?
Yeah, just a procedural thing. Should the applicant's attorney contact your office directly, or should that go through the county to avoid any ex parte issues?
No, I think that what any communication with my office is, should be by email and should be copied to everyone. So if the three attorneys get together and they all say, hey, these dates work for us because March 8th at 2 o'clock doesn't work for somebody now, then Wendy or somebody from the county could certainly contact my office, but they would have to be copied to all the attorneys so that there is no ex parte communication with the hearing examiner. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Foster, any questions from the county?
No, sir.
All right, we'll see everybody on March 8th. For the members of the public here, and there still are a whole bunch of you here, you're welcome to come to that hearing. You will not be allowed to participate. You'll not be allowed to testify. There won't be any testimony, but you're more than it'll be open to the public. If you want to attend, you'll need to probably, it won't be noticed. So you'll have to contact the county to get the Zoom link if that's something that you want to join on. All right. There are no other items on today's agenda. So what I'm going
to
do,
Mr. Hearing Examiner, there's one more item. We need to go back to.
Oh, yes. Yes. See, yeah. I know. I knew I'd forget that.
All right. I'm going to sign off, though.
Thank you very much. So now we are back to variance 21-536. And is the applicant ready to proceed at this time?
Can you hear me this time?
Yes. Can you state your name and address, please?
Yeah, my name is Humberto Ramirez, and my address is 257 South Station Road in Chelan.
All right, Mr. Ramirez, I'm going to have you raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you. So we're here on variance 21-536, your request for a variance. I don't know if you heard the staff report. They're recommending approval of the variance. You have the burden of proof to show compliance with all the applicable rules and regulations. So what would you like to tell me about this?
Well, I just wanted you to help me on this because I have a son that has two kids, and I really need a place for him to live. He's living with the in-laws now, and that's the best option for us to help him build a house. And and that little block that we where we're planning to build a house is, we still have a few trees of granny apples, and it's dangerous for my employees to go back and forth to drive a tractor on the public road. So I don't want to put them in danger anymore. So it will be probably better for us not to plant new trees on that, because we already have houses on the south and another house on the north, which, yeah, I think it will be beneficial for them too, so that we don't have to spray on these little trees.
So you're not going to be doing any orchard activities on this 1 acre parcel, is that correct?
That would be no more orchard.
So I asked staff this, and I'm going to ask you too. I know your lot is kind of, you know, rectangular with a little slant on the roadside. How wide is the lot? Do you know how wide the lot is?
We have eight rows, and I think it's about, and my guess, I don't know where the property corners are. I'm pretty sure I can find all four of them because I hear from the neighbor, the guy that sold me the lot, he said he remembers seeing them. So I just need to rent a metal detector to find them. But he told me there's about 130 feet or so. So he gave me a 10, he reduced his setbacks to 10 feet. And the neighbor on the west, I asked him for 35 feet and he said, yeah, I can give you that. If you give me the same rights for me, I said, oh yeah, there's no problem. And he was having kind of fun. He says, you see, we're not me and your own race is the ones that are giving you trouble. Sorry to say that. And sorry, this was my first time on Zoom, so I'm a little nervous today.
Nope, it all worked out just fine. Did you have a chance, Mr. Ramirez, to look at the staff report that was prepared by Mr. White?
I did see that, yeah.
And do you agree with the representations, what the staff report says?
Yeah, I do.
And did you look at the proposed conditions of approval that Mr. White set forth?
I didn't understand though, but I can have someone explain those to me. Yeah, my English is a little limited and some stuff to understand stuff like that, but yeah.
All right, well, what I usually ask is if you have any objection to those. At this point, you don't have an objection to any of the?
No.
Okay. All right, anything else you'd like to add, Mr. Ramirez?
No. I did mention this to Alex when I went to put my application in. I built a house in 257 substation, and we invested all of our life savings on this place. And after I built the house, I applied for a garage, and the county, they forgot, and I understand that I'm not against any of that anymore. They forgot to send me a notice of title against my property for when they gave me the permit for my house. And then when I applied for my garage, they told me, oh, we forgot to give you this, you need to sign this. So I was trying to build a house for my son on this parcel, but I don't want to invest any more money on this property because now we have a notice of title against our property. So yeah, I just want to say that so that you can help us and see if we can build a house for my son on that place.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. So I'll turn this over to the public again. Is there anybody here at the hearing that wishes to testify either in favor or against this project? If so, you just need to unmute yourself. All right, hearing none, is there anything further from staff?
Just for clarification, when he's talking about the notice of title, that's to another property that he owns.
And it's I understood. Yeah, I figured that one out. Thanks, though. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Alex.
Okay, so Mr. Ramirez, what I'm going to do is I'm going to close the record on this hearing at this time. I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. And there are, now there are no other items on today's agenda. I thank you all very much for coming. I'm now going to adjourn this February 16th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. Thank you all very much for coming. This meeting is now adjourned.
Thank you.